Welcome to the program, The EU and the World.
L'Europa e il mondo.
The podcast series of the Jean Monnet Chair, EU to Luck.
Hello everybody, welcome back to The EU and the World, L'Europa e il mondo. The podcast series of the Jean Monnet Chair, EU to Luck, sponsored by the European Union. Welcome to this second season of our podcast, and we start with a very, very welcome guest, Professor Jure Posgen, who is an assistant professor and the head of the Chair of International Relations at the Faculty of Social Sciences of the University of Ljubljana in Slovenia. Welcome, Jure. Let's start with your expertise. So you've done a lot of work on the external relations of the European Union. So my first question for you is, to what extent divergent national interests among member states actually undermine the EU's ability to act as a unified global actor?
Yeah, so when we talk about EU's external action, I think it's an observation that we can support by saying that it is often the case when the EU externally represents its member state that the national interest of the member state trump the EU goals, so the common goals. So instead of creating unity of the member states, the EU reflects the position, the diverging position of the member states. Now, of course, the main question here is why this happens. And I think that one needs to address this by first looking at how, although the institutional design of the European Union is intended to promote cooperation and unity, it often lacks the central authority that would then convince the member states and make the enforcement of the common position, if the member states agree, possible. So often what we see is that there is no unity and that the political will is lacking. Now, this is partly due to the very complex institutional architecture of the European Union, where we have parts of the European external action policies, such as trade, development, association agreements, somehow in terms of competences divided between the member states and the European Union. And this allows the European Union to, in greater instances, have a unified position. However, the more problematic field or policy is the foreign policy, where the competences remain at the level of the member states. And this already in terms of the decision making, of course, means that unless the member states are, unified, then there is no a common position of the European Union. And it somehow gives the impression that it's very difficult to achieve unified position of the member states in this regard. So what we see, for instance, if we look at what the European Union is doing in the case of the Russian war in Ukraine, we see that initially the EU has showed a remarkable unity with sanctions and support for Kiev. But when the conflict evolved, cracks started to appear, and these cracks were primarily due to the divergent national preferences of the member states vis-a-vis how the sanctions against the Russian Federation are actually affecting member states' energy policy. And as we have seen, this was the example of Hungary, for instance. Hungary has used its right to veto to block or postpone the common unified position of the European Union.
Absolutely. And one of the criticisms that are made against the European Union, and especially against its foreign policy, is the lack of hard power. So the EU has not real military power. Do you think that the EU's normative power, soft power, can compensate for this lack of hard power? Or does it actually make this problem of disunity even more acute?
I think it's both. Now, normative power can be valuable. It can be an added value of the European Union if we compare it to other international actors in the sphere of foreign policy or developmental and trade policy, but it is insufficient alone. So I think that inconsistency of the European Union's action, mostly in the foreign policy field, undermines not only the European Union's unity, but also its global influence, and somehow prevents this normative power to really, you know, make the effect for which it was somehow designed. So when we look at what normative power actually means, is that the EU often, when it engages in external relations with, you know, third states or international or governmental organization, tries to promote or export its own values, norms, and ideas about, you know, how to promote democracy, human rights, or the rule of law. And whereas in certain areas such as trade and development, this endeavor by the European Union was very much successful. We, looking at, for instance, enlargement policy, we already see that the EU, although it tried to be seen as a normative power or work through the so-called normative aspect of its external action, it often failed. It often failed because, you know, enlargement or the accession process has taken too long. Looking at the Western Balkans, in the last 20 years, no real progress has been made, with the only exception of Croatia. So I think this harms the credibility of the European Union, that by giving promise to the states waiting for membership, it doesn't actually allow it, due to, you know, other than economic and political interests also affecting what the European Union is doing. So I think that in this sense, there is also some inconsistency with regards to the member states. Some of them are very keen on the European Union having to use the normative power and not hard power, and others disagreeing that basically what the European Union should be specializing in is the normative aspect of its external relations, and you know, using hard power only in case it is able to develop instruments for hard power, and not necessarily specializing in being a hard power as such.
Yep. Considering these features that you have just mentioned, in your view, what are the future prospects for strengthening, therefore, the EU's external action? Do we need some reforms? Are there some possible strategies to make the EU really be able to speaking with one voice?
Sure. When we look at, for instance, the hard power that we say the EU lacks, so in order to, you know, develop the hard power capabilities, it needs to develop instruments that would allow it to act as a hard power. Currently, we see that although we have a policy, this policy is still intergovernmental. So when we talk about common security and defense policy, it's actually not really common, since the member states are still the final authorities to decide whether or not the European Union can do something. But often it is also, you know, hard power instruments that the EU is missing. So without, you know, the objective that of the member states, that the EU, that they want the EU to become a hard power, without the instruments, it is then, of course, difficult to expect that the European Union will be acting as a hard power. And again, coming back to the case of Ukraine, I would say if the EU wants to leave a greater you know, impression, or to do a better job, or to do more in Ukraine, what it needs to do is to decide whether or not it will somehow, member states will agree that hard power capabilities are necessary, and it will create instruments that it will allow it to work, or to basically be a hard power in this case as well. So what I think it's a step in this direction was the strategic compass as a strategy of where the European Union should be going. But it is also, you know, the European Defense Fund, and, you know, the recent attempts to do more in terms of both aiding Ukraine, including it, you know, in the enlargement policy, which is seen as the most effective foreign policy tool. And then on the other side, of course, what the European Union also needs to do is to simplify the ways decisions are being made. And I think this goes hand in hand with deciding that the member states actually want to not only design or establish a really common security and defense policy and common instruments, but that they are also willing to, you know, change the rule of unanimity in the foreign security and defense field, and introduce the qualified majority voting, which I think is already on the table for quite some time in the European Union, but at the moment I would say still no consensus exists between the member states whether or not they will cede this sovereignty in the field of security and defense decision making.
Yep, and certainly we face important challenges ahead. Europoscan, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us.
Welcome.
And please stay tuned with us for the next episode of our podcast series, The EU and the World, L'Europa e il Mondo. Thank you. Bye-bye.